My name is Leonard Chitty. I'm a Zambian Jesuit, and I head the Jesuit Center for Theological Reflection in Lusaka.
Just tell us a little bit about the history of this institute.
Well, it started in 1988. The Jesuits in Zambia and Malawi felt they needed a center that will help Jesuits to have sort of some understanding of the political, economic, social issues of the time and how they could incorporate those in their pastoral work or retreat work or education apostolates.
It's based on theological reflection, but it also has a very practical focus, doesn't it? Very practical ways of trying to help people improve their situation.
That's right. It uses the Catholic social teaching a lot to reflect on the challenging questions of the time and also to generate actions to try and resolve some of the issues. For example, we have a program that deals with the living conditions of the people. We carry out on a monthly basis a cost of living survey. And from the results of those surveys, we're able to mount some advocacy strategies to try and raise the awareness to the fact that many Zambians are not earning enough to afford just the basic needs to survive. So that comes out of our work. And then we testify regularly before government bodies or the parliament and stuff like that. So that is a practical aspect of our work.
Have you been involved also, I believe, in trying to implement some of the MDG goals, trying to work out ways in which they can be applied to Zambia particularly?
We have, particularly with respect to poverty. Like one of the goals aims at having the proportion of those living in extreme poverty by 2015. So we do some work in rural areas. We try and basically raise awareness, do education campaigns as well as advocacy to try and raise their living standards. We also pay some attention to women's and children's rights. And also we do look at the environmental question as well. Not very much, but we do pay some attention to it, yeah.
Looking at those Millennium Development Goals, there's a lot of pessimism that, in fact, those very ambitious goals will not be achieved by the deadline. How do you see the situation in your own country?
It's interesting. They say that we'll meet some of the goals, particularly in education and gender equality. They say we'll meet those by 2015, but the vast majority we will not manage to achieve them, which is sad in a way. But one wonders, as you said, whether we were too ambitious when we thought about these goals. But the other problem would be for my own country, the fact that we have so much potential, but we're not using the potential to address the real issues. So one would have hoped that at least we do what we can with, you know, the means that we have at our disposal to try and address some of these issues. But that isn't happening, partly because our politicians are preoccupied with other things. But also we do have, like in many other countries, the issue of corruption, so many resources are diverted to private and selfish interests. So it's unfortunate. The goals are laudable. I think they canvass or mobilize us to try and work for something good for the majority of people, but unfortunately it looks like we won't meet many of them.
You're talking about questions of corruption, and you say you testify before the government. How much is the church's voice heard in your country with regard to these crucial issues that affect people's lives and livelihoods?
The church is very well respected every time we speak. They listen. They may not publicly give the impression that they're listening to us, but they do. But also another way in which we know the church is influential is the fact that we're heading towards elections later this year. And whenever the Catholic Church raises issues around elections and corruption and stuff like that, we get an immediate response from the government, which normally is negative, but at least that shows you that the church is very active. It's very well respected because over the years it has always stood up and spoken about the critical questions of the time, be they elections or poverty or whatever. And so it's well respected as the moral voice or the moral conscience of the nation. And the church has been effective in communicating its position over time through pastoral letters and press conferences, press releases, etc. Using the media, really, I think it's become quite good at doing that.
You say the reactions from the government are usually negative. Do you have problems in your work? Do you have any kind of harassment because of the work that you do?
Actually not. This is why I say, you know, publicly they would appear to be opposing us, but they don't trouble us at all. You know, you would go to meetings with them and you meet and talk, you know, in a very nice way. And as I say, I think they admire work, particularly in the social area. You know, we run lots of schools and hospitals, you know, we take care of orphans and vulnerable children. So they know that, you know, at the same time as we are raising critical questions, that we are actually doing something which they respect very much and which they appreciate, because it should be their job to provide education services or health services, and they're not managing to do that. So the church is complementing that.
Looking ahead to the elections, as you say, in November, is that right?
We think it will be September, sometime in September or early October.
What do you see as the most challenging priorities? You mentioned already corruption, which is undoubtedly one of the issues that must be tackled ahead of the elections. But what do you see as areas where people should be focusing their attention?
I would talk about poverty, which is something that people know. Like, almost two-thirds of the population is classified poor. And one of the reasons many people are poor is because we haven't created enough jobs, and I think it's within our powers to do that. So I'll talk about poverty in relation to employment, but I would also talk about generally governance issues. You know, corruption is an issue. I would also talk about the fact that right now we are earning a lot from exporting copper, but most of the profits are going to the mining companies, which are owned by overseas companies. And so very little of the money that's coming through copper revenues is being invested within the country. So those would be some of the issues that I would be interested in seeing our politicians address before we elect him.
Zambia is a resource-rich country, isn't it?
It is a very rich country, potentially a rich country. We have copper, as I mentioned. We have plenty of arable land, plenty of fresh waters, a very favorable climate, a very peaceful country. And this is why I said it's a pity that we haven't really applied the potentials to the problems we have. It's hard to explain why that's the case. One would think it's selfishness on the part of our leaders, but, you know, it can't really be that way. I mean, there's so much for so many people, and yet we're not promoting equity and we're not redistributing the wealth to as many people as possible.
As you say, Zambia does seem to be a haven of peace and tranquility away from so many of the other problems, ethnic issues that are afflicting other countries around you in the region. What do you put this down to?
Interesting. I've been asked that question many times. One of the things that I personally feel has contributed to this situation is the fact that right from independence, the first president really worked hard to ensure that the 73 tribes saw themselves as belonging to one nation. You know, he used the motto, One Zambia, One Nation. And in trying to put that into practice, he would appoint people from one part of the country to a different part of the country. And then, secondly, I feel personally that the existence of the mines has also been a contributing factor, because it draws people from around the country. And when you're doing the same job, living in the same housing compounds, you send your kids to the same schools. So there's a certain oneness that sort of grows. Those are the three things I would attribute to the fact that we've had peace all these years, whereas our neighbors, most of them have been involved in one civil strife or war or whatever in this period of time that we've been independent.